If you want to find the secrets of the universe, think in terms of energy, frequency, and vibration. The day science begins to study non-physical phenomena, it will make more progress in one decade than in all the previous centuries of its existence. Nikola Tesla.
Welcome to the Frequency Shifter Show. I'm your host, Corinne Summers, founder of Artisan Pharmacy. In this show, we explore ways to raise the frequency of ourselves, one another, and our planet. We're digging deep into all things metaphysical, from what is frequency, to the power of sound, the Schumann resonance, our DNA, Reiki, the energy of water, and beyond. All to shift our minds and bodies back into alignment with richer states of connection, elevated awareness, and maximum human potential. And we're bringing on the global experts and thought leaders to share their wisdom as they let us pick their brains around all these juicy, mysterious topics.
First of all, I don't know who Ricky is and metaphysical. Schumann's Renaissance? I don't even know. What are you talking about? Wait a minute. I need us to take a step back and calm down. What are we even talking about here?
Oh, yeah. I forgot to mention, I have a co-host. The universe insisted. What can I say? This is Alex Terranova, founder of Dream Mason. He's sort of a newbie to some of this frequency stuff, and he's going to help keep everything balanced, grounded, and relatable.
So this show isn't just for the experts to nerd out on all things metaphysical, but it's an open welcome space for everyone to explore the mysteries of the universe and raise our frequencies together.
Today's guest, Kate O'Donnell, is a certified Ayurvedic practitioner who spent 20 years studying in India, which I think is so cool, the mother place of Ayurveda. So lots of really interesting tips to give us. She's also the author of multiple Ayurvedic-focused books, including The Everyday Guide to Ayurveda for Self-Care and The Everyday Ayurvedic Cookbook, which is a guide to seasonal eating. She's also contributed to several of her publications, such as Yoga Journal, Women's Health, and NPR. And overall, her offerings really aim to help others come closer to their true nature. I was sadly not actually a part of interviewing for this episode. I was traveling in New York City at the time and ran into some internet issues. So Alex and Kate took this one on their own, but it turned into a really fabulous episode. Alex, what'd you guys talk about?
I feel so abandoned. I felt like you just left me and I was alone and scared.
The internet monsters got me.
It's so funny that, you know, how the Ayurvedic episodes have been like really like connecting to me. Like we keep having these episodes and I keep feeling like everything that we're getting is like speaking right to me. Like, come here, do this, follow this path. And this was another one. So we talked about, you know, energy and food and our diet. We talked about yoga to Ayurveda, the science of life. She taught me things like the four things that like life is made up of: the physical, the mental, the senses, the soul, and how we perceive our world through all these different avenues. We looked at the elements and how we keep things in balance, like the doshas and the different ways that we taste. Because it was just the two of us, I feel like I got to get a real sense of Ayurveda in a way that was like more really, I want to say, for the newbie or someone who maybe, you know, you've listened to one of our episodes before, but you really want to get a sense of like how you could use it and how you could empower it. And that's where we really went. So we looked at things like how approaching health this way, you're looking a lot at your eyes, your nails, your tongue, your skin, and your breath. You don't have to like draw your blood and run through all these things. There's like obvious signs of our health and our balance right in natural components of who we are and how we show up. So we also talked about finding how you would go about finding a good Ayurvedic, you know, doctor or practitioner. We talked about how things show up in your life, like what, like headaches or digestive tract issues. I feel like I could go on and on, but yeah, we went pretty deep because it was just the two of us and I was feeling alone and scared. So, you know, I like really leaned into, you know, her knowledge and wisdom. But I think this episode is really great for people that want to take another step forward and maybe they're on the fence about approaching an Ayurvedic approach to their health.
Yeah. I think it's interesting. We've had a lot of Ayurveda. We've had three out of our two seasons, we've had three Ayurvedic episodes. And it does seem like you keep getting like these messages directed at you to seek it and dive more into it. And so I feel like it was almost the universe creating the internet issues. Like it happened that way for a reason and a purpose so that you could have that one-on-one and really, you know, get some answers. And now you're working with somebody in Ayurveda for yourself, aren't you?
I am. I just started. All these episodes that we've done have like pushed me over the edge where I was like, all right, I got to just heed the call of the universe and see what happens.
Woohoo. Well, with that, great way to kick into the episode. Here we go.
Okay. So Kate, I know what the term Ayurveda means, and I've actually interacted with an Ayurvedic doctor. We had somebody on season one, which is a great episode. But for you, right, everything has different meaning for different people. What is an Ayurvedic diet, lifestyle? Like, what does that really mean to you?
That's a big question, for sure. So, you know, I had studied yoga daily for 10 years before I really started studying Ayurveda. So to me, the lifestyle is very closely related. So Ayurveda, some people will say it means science of life, but that word Ayur actually means that which is made up of these four things. So life is described as having the four components of the physical body, the mental field, the field of the mind, the senses, which I think is very interesting, and the soul, or the Atman. And so the idea is that in an Ayurvedic life, or in the pursuit of health and happiness, all four of those aspects of a person's life have to be taken into account in equal measure. That to me is kind of what it means, you know, so that we're integrating like the health of the physical body, the health of the mind, the mental space, the health of the sense organs and their relationship to the stimulations around us. And also that level of soul to me is like not sweating the small stuff so much, you know, but really like thinking about and feeling for the larger meanings in our daily, not like this big lofty stuff, but just like the depth of experience that we have available to us every moment, every day, even just your normal old day, you know, is kind of like a sacred thing.
The piece that hits for me that is feels a little different, or I'm curious about, is the sense piece, because we often think like, you know, mind, body, spirit. You said you called it, you know, physical, mental, and soul. In my natural sense would be that sense would fall into those categories, but you have it as a separate. I don't mean that you have it, like, but you have it as a separate category. How does senses specifically differentiate from the physical and the mental?
It's a good question. I mean, part of what I think it points at is the importance of the activity of the sense organs. So like we're talking about eyeball, ears, skin, and tongue, and nose, right? So we have these physical organs, which, you know, if you take your ear and put it on the floor, you know, like unattached to a body and its prana, that these organs mean nothing, right? So the sense organs, the senses are, that term sort of belies a relationship between the physical body, the prana that enlivens it, and the mind. The mind is the part of the organism that takes the information from the sense organs and integrates it into the organism. So the senses themselves are where like a lot of the action goes down. And the senses also come up in another area of study in Ayurveda, which is the main causes of disease. And two of them have to do with the sense organs, right? So it's like the sense organs they're kind of pathological if we don't pay attention. You know, that like, if you know, if you eat a cookie, it tastes great, you love it, and that's fine. It's just then your tongue wants a cookie all the time. Mm-hmm. It wants to repeat the experience. So it's sort of like one of the essential flaws in the human organism is that the mind attaches to the cookie for that feeling of pleasure instead of realizing that the feeling of pleasure is available at any time.
I hear this, the senses, in a way, they're like a bridge between the physical and the mental. So they kind of exist in both spaces at the same time, in a way.
Absolutely. Yeah. I describe them sort of like the windows.
Okay.
Between the external and the internal world.
Nice. Yeah.
And they're also, I also describe the senses as windows into the nervous system, which I think that means a lot to where people are at health-wise right now. So it's like all the stimulation that comes in and then has to be integrated, that all happens in the nervous system. And so people, you know, the nervous system kind of is in a reactive state, I think, for a lot of us because of the amount of stimulation coming in these windows all the time.
That's such an, I've never thought about it. Like, it, I love that metaphor for them being windows, right? Because if there is, I'm sitting next to a window, and if the sun was constantly, you know, coming in and hitting me, it would burn my skin, right? Or I would be squinting. But you're totally, it's a beautiful, because we are, even if we're, I feel pretty safe and secure in my life on a regular basis. But to your point, right, the TV, the internet, podcast, social interaction, just going to a store, right, even on a subconscious level, I'm being bombarded by fears and judgments and opinions and thought, right, every, all these things. And there's no shutter. There's no shutters for my eyes and my ears. We can minimize them, right? I can like not look online or do things, but unless I lock myself in a room, essentially, there's really no way to shield my senses from all the things that are happening.
Yeah, it's true. So that's why things like meditation are wonderful therapies. You know, because it's sort of like a cleansing of the mind that happens, you know, because you're away from stimulation for that period of time. But you know, if we jump over to the yoga text for a minute, it's like the strong mind, the strong mind of a practitioner can be in the midst of all that stimulation and not be unnerved by it. So it's not about making it go away. It's about strengthening the mind. So that all that stuff can be going on. It's like being able to meditate, you know, like next to a subway. But yeah. They all noise is going on, right? But the yogi is sort of undisturbed through years and years of practice.
I love that. I recently do a lot of cold plunging as much as I can. And I had I'm just seeing the connection here. I had an experience recently where, right, it's freezing when you get in, and the coldness goes right to your brain, and your brain's like, I got to get out of here, right? Sometimes we experience this with heat in a hot yoga room. I got to get out of here. And I took on a practice where I would say to myself, just feel the feelings, right? So it'd be like, oh, it pokes, whatever. And then it was a second practice of just notice the thoughts. And then one day after doing this for a while, I noticed I was in the water. My skin had the goosebumps. I was actually shivering. And my speech, I was talking to somebody who was not in the water, and my voice was like crackling from the shivering, right? But there was no thoughts of I'm cold or I'm freezing. It was simply a physical experience, but it wasn't in my mind, and I was totally fine. And I was just sitting in there hanging out. And that is, I'm relating that to being able to meditate like next to a subway.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think that's, practice of the cold plunge is a great example of a way to strengthen the mind. You know, that all that stimulus is coming in and you're in a safe zone because you can get out at any time, right? But you can work with it. And we do that in yoga classes, like you described. And, you know, same thing when you're sitting there meditating, like all you want to do is get up, get off, go somewhere else.
Yep. And I think that, I mean, I'm so seeing the connection between, look, if you're not in a safe place, right? If you are in a war zone where there's actually dangerous things happening around you that can literally hurt you, we're not talking about that, right? We're talking about how often the stimulus, which isn't actually dangerous, it's just bombarding in a way, and it's distracting and invasive, that if we build these up, I'm relating this to, we're able to live our lives more the way we want to live it because we're not subject to necessarily the fear or the panic or the anxiety or even like old traumas because we have more facility or more resiliency with who we are in our mind. Is that?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
How do we, let's like tie this back to our, like our Ayurvedic lifestyle or practices. How does this, how does food, obviously food is a big part, right? How do we, how does this get woven in? How does food become a piece of this?
Yeah. So one thing we didn't mention about the senses, you know, these windows actually need to be cleaned, right? We need clean so that our perception of reality is as clear as it can be. And so there are daily practices that happen in the morning that involve care of the senses. So we do things to our ears and our eyes and our skin. A lot of them use oil. So we oil the skin, the ears, the nose. We might use a cooling rose water or just cool water in the eyes. We scrape the mucus off the tongue. You know, so there's this whole dinacharya that happens in the morning, which is a purification of the sense organs so that our windows are clean as we go out into the world, you know, for the rest of that day. And so the tongue being one of the senses, that's our sense of taste, right? And so a lot of the way that we talk about food in Ayurveda has to do with its tastes. And so your tongue responds to the food and gives you information about the composition of the food, you know, whether it's heavy or light or heating or cooling. And then based on that information, you can make that choice. You know, is this the right thing for me to eat at the moment? So the way that food is looked upon is that the medicines in Ayurveda are, there's subtle therapies like yoga, meditation, you know, all those sorts of things that affect the subtle body and the energy body. But on a physical level, it's all about the substances that are available to us. And all the substances in the universe are composed of these five elements, which all is what the body is composed of. And so the idea is to sort of keep a balanced palette of these elements in the body at all times. And so we do that by enjoying foods that contain the six tastes, because each of those tastes is a combination of elements. And so we're eating this sort of, you know, varied diet where we're getting all the different qualities, heavy, light, hot, cool, moist, dry, so that the body then isn't too dry or too hot, right? Or those kind of things. So we manage physical imbalances through taking in substances, and food is, that's the main substance, and it's happening all the time. So then the medicine is happening in your life, you know, several times a day.
I'm curious how you would relate to this. I often think that when so many people talk about balance or wanting balance in their life, and I'm often like, balance is kind of a myth. We don't, right? You don't do everything that with your left hand, with your right. You don't make sure that you write with your right hand as much to balance it out, right? We don't, we don't necessarily, even in nature, right? There aren't an equal number of trees as there are to flowers, or right? Like, things are, and I think that we don't, I get that we don't want things to be unproportionate one way or the other. I've recently been thinking about it as like a teeter-totter. There's like an ebb and flow, right? The ocean is like that. It comes in and out. Our heart expands and contracts. Is there an aspect of that? Like, it's not actually about having them all be perfectly equal. Or is it about them having perfectly, or is there like a natural ebb and flow to the foods and the with the energies, I guess I would say?
It's all moving. It's all the time. Like, we're constantly moving in a flux, you know, in and out of state balance. And I think the idea, the way that Ayurveda looks at that which causes imbalance in the body is called a dosha. That means that which is at fault. And so these doshas, these are your composition in your body is a combination of these three doshas, which are all very happy and good and doing their jobs when they're in a state of balance. And there's no blueprint for like everyone should have like equal amounts of the three. You know, it's not like you say, it's not like that. It's you get your DNA. It, you know, and this body comes into the universe and it's got its particular unique blueprint. So the closer that one stays to that state of elemental composition, the healthier you'll feel. And so what happens is, you know, you live in a hot climate You grow up in a hot place. You eat a bunch of hot, spicy food. You know, you drink coffee every day. You have alcohol. And you get all this adrenaline and cortisol. You're stressing out, right? And like, so years of a particular trajectory go on through our lifestyle and through our dietary choices. And if we're not tempering that by bringing in some of those opposite qualities, the doshas get on a trajectory. And it's sort of exponential when they start moving, and they move out of the range of normal. So it's like you get far enough away from your natural blueprint that you're not yourself.
Mm.
Now and then all this weird stuff starts happening. Like, why do I have acid stomach? Why do I have diarrhea? Like, why am I tweaked out? Why am I not sleeping? You know, so these are all just signs that that trajectory has sort of taken one away from the natural state. So we're constantly just trying to, we're always moving all over the freaking place. That's the nature of reality for most people. And so the job is to be aware of what our state of normal is and what are those early signs and symptoms that tell us I'm starting to feel a little tweaked, you know, or my sleep is getting weird or my digestion's weird. And then Ayurveda gives us that knowledge, but also the tools. Okay, well, let's eat less of this and more of this. You know, let's try like sleeping at this time and not at that time. And so you introduce these balancing principles throughout the life, and what you need might change, you know, and it's always changing. But if you understand sort of the framework of things and what are the qualities in your body, what are the qualities in your food, and what are the effects of your activity, like cold plunging versus hiking or jogging versus watching TV. All of these things are affecting, you know, the state of your body.
So I'm picturing almost like life is a river, and it's like that's the flow of it. It's just happening. It's constantly flowing. And in this, it's like our job inside of this river to not get to that all the things, the food is coming down the river, the activities are coming down the river, right? Other people are coming down the river, that our job is to not get like smashed up against a rock or stay perfectly still, but it's somehow to navigate the energy of this river and create a harmonious balance or harmonious kind of ride or journey with it. Does Ayurveda look at like everything we're dealing as energy, like just different forms of energy? Can you speak to that a little bit?
Well, so the science is very much focused on substances, but the interesting thing about that is that substances are not necessarily tangible matter all the time. So the substance can also be the mind. You know, the soul is a substance. And so because all of these things are influential, so anything that is influential on the organism, anything that's coming down that stream, right, is considered a substance. Like it's a causative factor in the how one is existing in the world. So it's kind of interesting because and it's almost like it's assumed that everything is infused with energy. And so we almost don't like talk about it. Like that dichotomy is almost not there. It's like assumed that energy is present. And so that energy is called prana. That's the life energy. So if prana is not in a body, it's just the elements, you know, it's just this flesh sack. And so that prana is, that's the energy that is moving things in the universe.
As someone that, I don't know how far, like how much of your lifestyle actually, before I ask the next question, how much of your lifestyle is lived in a, I want to say in an Ayurvedic sense?
I mean, it's kind of a trick question, you know, because I think that I view everything through that lens.
Okay.
Like I can be at a restaurant eating, you know, something that's completely not healthy for my body and be watching the compositions of all the human beings around me, you know, and every time I eat anything, I'm conscious of the taste in the food, the elemental compositions of the food. So I'm always experiencing reality through the lens of of Ayurveda. I kind of can't help myself at this point. Whether I sort of follow the rules all the time, that is one of the wonderful things, Alex, about my journeys. When I came to Ayurveda, I was kind of sick. Like I had a lot. I had parasitic infections up the wazoo for like a half a dozen years. And so I had all of these problems, digestive problems and immune system problems. And so I followed the rules, you know, and I followed the text about, you know, what to do at what time and like just totally dove in and lived somewhat stringently for like a decade. And as I've been able to heal my digestive tract and sort of get my body back into closer to its natural blueprint. And through that process, you know, I understand myself better. Now I know what I can get away with.
Yeah.
And I don't try to be perfect. And I actually find that this is what's so interesting is that when you read like the classical Ayurveda texts, they talk about how your food should taste good and how it should be pleasant to you. And that if a food is not pleasant, one shouldn't eat it.
Mm.
You know, so it's like actually being harmonious with one's environment sometimes doesn't look like being a perfect Ayurveda following the rules person. And the more I hang out with people who are in healthy states through Ayurveda, they eat everything because they have good digestion.
Sure. It also, it reminds me too, there's two things. One is like, I found out about Ayurveda probably 10 years ago when I was struggling with sleep and digestive issues and I was living in New York and someone at a yoga studio, someone suggested this and I met a man who three generations from India didn't speak English. Like he had a trans, it was an amazing experience. And he's telling me like, hey, you shouldn't eat pears and things that I never would have. I'm like, why, what's wrong with a pear? And it's like, there's nothing wrong with a pear. It's just not suited for you at this moment. Right. And it wasn't. And I had another interaction with this experience when I became a vegan for a year and noticed how so many of my behaviors changed. My body composition changed. I felt completely different. And yet I was eating in a way that I wasn't accustomed to. And then recently what I've noticed is I used to always make shakes, like fruits and vegetables, you know, different things. And I'd make, and for a long time, it felt really good to have that as what I would start kind of in the middle of my day. And what I just noticed recently is it's like, it doesn't feel good anymore. Mm-hmm. The same ingredients kind of just feel bland and like I don't want to finish it. Yeah. And now I'm listening to you and I'm like, maybe my body's actually telling me whatever it is. It's not that these foods are bad, right? It's not like kale and spinach or whatever is bad, but maybe it's just like not what I need right now.
Absolutely. And you know, one of the things, a general principle for everybody in Ayurveda is to eat seasonally.
Mm.
So we sort of are switching what we're eating based on the seasons. So in a cold season, you might gravitate away from like a smoothie or a salad and gravitate towards soup.
Mm-hmm.
Or meal, you know, and then as it starts to get warm, you might gravitate back towards those things. So it's like over the course of an annual cycle where you're eating and drinking different things. And so you'll be like, oh, I love my shake, do, do, do. And then the season starts changing.
Yeah.
You know? Or you move or you get a different job, right? Like your climate's the only thing, you know? And I think we have seasons in our own lives also, yeah, where you undergo some sort of change. And then it doesn't taste the same, right? You're like, whoa, why does this not work anymore? But it's actually natural for things to not remain. Mm-hmm.
It's so refreshing to hear that too, because we really like consistency, right? Like just as humans, we like comfort, we like consistency. And often we think it's good for us or what we need. But as you, I'm assuming, like, I feel like you would know this from the experiences you've shared, that often what we need is on the other side of, is getting out of that. And I think of diet and exercise so often as we really like what we find has worked, right? Smoothies have worked. Eating this way has worked. Exercising has worked in a certain way. But then we notice, wait a minute, something's changed. I think for like 5 or 6 years, I was doing yoga every single day, hot yoga 5 days a week. I barely do yoga anymore. And it doesn't actually feel right to go back to yoga right now. And I sometimes make myself wrong for that. But right. what I'm really getting from you is like, hey, if I do leave the smoothie thing, or I do separate from yoga or even meditation, right? If you change your pattern, you spend more time in nature instead of maybe meditating, that there's nothing, that there's freedom in that, that's actually more natural than sticking with something that worked for years and years and years.
Right. Absolutely. And depending on one's constitution, some people are the types who will just like do the same thing, you know, year after year. Sure. Other people are the types who can't be consistent to save themselves. You know? And so the people who are doing the same thing day after day after day, we're like, hey, let's shake it up, right? Let's try something different. And the people who can't like settle down, we're let's try to do this thing for 6 months straight. And that's sort of a medicine, you know, because we're introducing an opposite habit to the one that has sort of become problematic.
Yeah. Okay. I want to ask you about something that I've seen in Ayurveda that we don't typically see elsewhere, right? When you go to a typical doctor or medical person, it's like they take your blood, they, you know, put a stethoscope on you. But when I've done more Ayurvedic experiences, they're like, let me see your tongue. They want to look in my eyes. They want to listen to my blood, which sounds, when I just say it out loud, it sounds a little wackier. And it also somehow sounds way more natural because that would have existed long before technology got involved, right? But we actually speak to like, what are they doing when they're looking at in my eyes, at my tongue? Like, what does that even mean to listen to my blood?
Right. Yeah. And these are like your vital signs. Right. With the measurement tools, as you said, are the old fashioned ones. Right. So it's like, and I think that a lot of the knowledge that's being called upon when these Ayurvedic physicians are doing diagnostics based on eyes, skin, nails, tongue, nadi, which is the pulse, you know, they're bringing like years of experience to the table where they've seen, oh, I've seen eyeballs like that before. You know, like as a practitioner, I've been doing this 20 years, like it's like that, you know, like there's no new plots, you know. So the Ayurveda, the Acharyas, or say the ancients, right? Thousands of years of trial and error of observing human bodies actually codified in some information about, well, if somebody's got this kind of disorder, their eyeballs will do this. Their skin will appear this way, right? You'll this in the pulse. And so all of that stuff is laid out because those are the diagnostics. And so you know, you might recognize a disorder based on something you see on someone's tongue. And that information just came from these thousands of years of observation of bodies.
Yeah. What is it? This might be hard to, when you're listening to someone's blood, right? I imagine that we've all heard our own pulse, right? We've all kind of felt our pulse. Can you even explain what that means? Like to hear it versus feel, like, right, where I just feel like the thump, but yeah. You're hearing when you're listening, if you were listening to my pulse, you're not just hearing the thump there. So what are you listening for? Is that something that you can explain?
Well, there, depending who you learn from, you'll learn different things, right? And it's definitely, I see it as an esoteric art that is very, it's very interesting and runs the full gamut. What I have learned about that is that you're able to feel the qualities of the doshas, like one of them, like quick and wiry, one of them. So that one is said to feel like a snake. And so you feel that in someone's pulse. It feels like a snake moving, you know, under your fingers. And then one is considered to feel like a frog. That's that throbbing. And that's the people who have more heat in their bodies. Right? And you feel that thunk, thunk. It is like a jump frog is jumping against your fingers. And then in the sort of more watery body type, it's the swan. And so it really does feel like this very smooth wave-like motion. And then you can feel for whether doshas are present in different systems in the body through the pulse. So you could feel like there's vata in the lungs, right? So you get that wiry feeling in the lung pulse, that sort of a thing. So you're able to feel sort of what these doshas are up to in a body
That's so interesting. And to, from not having these skills practiced, right, to imagine, right, like I only know what my blood really sounds like.
Yep.
And I could almost apply any of what you said. Oh, it sounds really small. Right. Not having anything to compare it to. I say that because like somebody's sitting at home and they're like putting their fingers.
Yeah.
I don't know that you could even differentiate if you didn't, right, if you didn't have the three to listen to.
Right. What you could do though is pick a couple friends. And feel their pulses, and then you'll be like, oh, you'll start to get it. Will start to a pattern will emerge, you know. Sure. You go around at parties and feel people's pulses.
I really want to tell people that are listening to this, if you haven't had an experience in our either with food or an Ayurvedic, like I don't practitioner, doctor, I don't know what the term would be. It's really interesting. Whether you decide to go on this journey, it was one of the coolest experiences I had because it was just so, I almost would relate it to if you're an American and you went to China or Japan, that when you go to England, it's not that different, right? If you go to Western Europe, it's not different. But if you go to Africa or an Asian country, it's like, oh my God, this world is it looks completely different. Yes, there's people, they eat food, but it looks different. And that was the experience I had in my Ayurvedic experiences was this eye-opening to just a completely new way to look at my body and myself, whether I chose it or not is another thing. But I felt like I got to go on a ride with this person and simply see myself through a different perspective.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, you know, those who are familiar with Chinese medicine will find similarities for sure in the way that we view the body. And people who are interested in yoga will especially love it. The anatomy is the same. Anatomy and physiology that underlie yoga are the same that underlie the Ayurveda system. So it's, I landed on Indian soil at age 19 and things have not been the same since. So I hear what you're saying, Alex, about like going for a ride. I've been on the ride since I was 19 and I was so blown away by how different it is, you know, and what I find in practicing Ayurveda is how beneficial it can be to open the mind to a new way of seeing, especially when there is a disorder, you know, that like doesn't make sense through the Western model. And that I see this all the time, you know, that's especially with disorders that don't make sense through the Western model. You plop it into an Ayurveda context and there's all this clarity.
Yeah. Almost every person I know at some point in time has a digestion issue.
Right.
And everybody's like, it's this or it's that, or they have to find what it is. And I've had my own experience where like Western medicine could give me no answers. Nothing was wrong, yet I did not feel good and my gut didn't feel right. And that through non-Western, some of it just eating differently, right? It doesn't have to be created solutions or relief. But I think that we're so, especially on the West, we're so could like, we need like a specific answer, like a recipe. I think that what I hear you saying is there's so much more flow and feeling than just, hey, here's your answer, right? It's like, it's less black and white and a lot more in the gray. Is that fair?
Yeah. It does depend on the stage that the imbalance is at. You know, if something is pretty progressed, all a person's going to feel is problems. Mm. That can be, that's when getting help. Like it sounds like you did, you know, you were lucky enough to find an Ayurvedic physician, then they can put it in the lens for you and make recommendations for you to follow for a while. And as you move back into a state of balance, then you can feel it. Then you know what normal for you feels like and what is not normal. And so that's where the preventive aspect of Ayurveda is for everyone. And it is an awareness practice. It's about being aware, you know, like, oh, am I gassier than I was last season? Let me think why might that be? You know, or you notice that you get a sinus infection like around the same time of year.
Mm-hmm.
Year, you know. So there's like you draw these correlations by observing, you know, over time. So I feel like for many people practicing Ayurveda in one place, like I say give it a year. because as seasons are changing, it's right. So much.
This leads me to a place. People that are listening to this that don't even know where to start, or for anyone, right? Anyway, if I'm sending this to friends that are having issues, what's the first? Well, actually, let me say this first. What are some things that are common that you've commonly supported people that you see a lot of that people aren't finding relief, let's say in traditional Western medicine, that you or Ayurveda has been able to support them with?
Yeah, one of the big ones is constipation. And constipation can cause a lot of other problems if it goes on for a while. And there's all different sort of causes of constipation, right? So that's a place where Ayurveda excels for sure. All the digestive disorders, even things that have been called as IBS, SIBO, there's some of these sort of like weird in the Western world, the symptom cluster is a little unclear. You know, but people are getting these kind of weird diagnoses and there's really nothing you can do. Anything that's living in the digestive tract, Ayurveda excels at that sort of a thing. I see a lot of headaches and migraines, and generally I do see improvement there for sure. Some practitioners will specialize in the mental field, in things like anxiety, sleep difficulties, depression. So you can seek out a specialist in sort of Vedic psychology, is what that's called, for mental unrest, I would say. But at the same time, I see a lot of people, maybe they're not diagnosed, but a lot of people who come feeling unsettled, you know, like on the border of the anxiety. And then there's like the full gamut of problems with sleep that I've worked with, that definitely Ayurveda is helpful there. And in general, I would say Ayurveda is a longevity practice. So it's a wonderful place to look for healthy aging and women's changes, like menstrual problems, fertility problems, definitely an awesome place to work with fertility and also menopause and healthy aging for anybody.
I've never thought about this, or is there an area that looks at like things like cancer or in, let's say, major autoimmune diseases, HIV, herpes, like any of those? Does Ayurveda support? Obviously it does. It's because it does everything. But have you seen success in those areas?
Yeah. Yeah. So like thyroid problems, autoimmune problems. With cancer, I think more one can look to Ayurveda to support, say, the digestion, the immune system, and the overall health of the organism while it's undergoing therapies.
Oh.
You know, like chemo and radiation. So I think like learning about the diet, like how to eat well during that time and how to rejuvenate. So rejuvenation is a big, big part of Ayurvedic practice. So let me just, for people who are new, which most people I don't think know this, but in America, there's sort of three levels of practitioner. So there's Ayurvedic health counselor, who's trained in biorhythms, diet, use of spices and some herbs. Definitely an Ayurvedic health counselor can help with early states of imbalance, sleep problems, and optimizing the digestion, that kind of thing. Ayurvedic practitioners, they have a little more training in dealing with things like autoimmune. And then there's also Ayurvedic doctor. And so if somebody's working with a disease, like a, you know, a classified disease, seeking out an Ayurvedic doctor. And it's getting so that you can find all three of these levels of practitioner to work with. And I think most of these practitioners will probably have a clear thing on their website or talk with you for a bit about what you have going on and can they help you for sure. But I do think a good place to start for anybody, not to toot my own horn, but my books, I think, are really excellent, you know, to just learn about it. So then it's not all like Greek to you if you do start working with a health counselor or a practitioner. So, you know, the Everyday Ayurveda Cookbook is about getting your kitchen in order and eating seasonal foods. the Cooking for a Calm, Clear Mind, that's where we use the language and talk about disorders in the mind and actually using food to heal the mind. And then the guide to self-care is the place where people really want more theory. They want to dork out a bit. Like that's, that one has, it does have some recipes for home remedies, but that one is more in like dorking out about Ayurvedic physiology.
And can people work with you one-on-one? Can they work? Do you, or is it, is that a possible? I know your website is, I want to make sure.
Yeah.
Ayurvedic Living Institute. I guess what, is that a forward slash? I never know. They're forward.
Institute.
No, we'll put it all in the show notes. So if you don't know how to spell Ayurvedic, it's totally fine. It'll be, the link will be in there. So can people work with you one-on-one? What are the ways that you support people?
Yeah. So I haven't been doing many one-on-ones. Like I haven't been taking new clients this year. I might open that up again next year. What I do have is tons of online courses, seasonal cleansing program, which are a great way to start to get a handle on some digestive disorders and just learn some of the Ayurvedic routines. You know, we learn all that sense care stuff, you know, when everyone's doing that every day. It's like a boot camp, you know, it's like a 10-day thing where we all jump in and start sort of like eating the recipes and doing therapies and practices. And I do have a membership where we meet once or twice a month. And that's a place where people are, I give them content that I want them like reading and watching videos monthly. And then we get together and talk about it, love questions. And that's a good way to, for people who want to like learn about Ayurveda in terms of finding a practitioner, you know, for people who really have stuff going on, they think they need to work one-on-one. I would go to the National Ayurvedic Medical Association website, namaayurveda.org. That's a place where you'll find a directory and a listing of people in your area.
Awesome. The last thing I want to, we ask everyone, what is a, in your, to your definition, in your life, what is a frequency shifter?
Yeah, I like that question. I feel like what those words you're getting at is like frequency is like your, it's your vibration. It's your subtle field, you know? So it's the movements of your prana and your attention, because your prana follows the mind. So whatever the mind is fixated on, that's where all the energy is flowing. So I think a frequency shifter is one who actually has some control over the movements of the mind. And an ability to harmonize or almost curate the experience moment to moment.
I love that. Thank you so much, Kate, for, I'm sorry Karina wasn't here with us today. And, but thank you so much for being here, for just taking this journey with me. Is there anything you want to say to leave the audience with before I let you go?
You know, the one thing I want to say is in my practice in working with people, I continue to be blown away by how the very simple stuff begins to turn around disorders that seem really overwhelming.
Yeah, I identify with that. And it's funny. We often think to the biggest things and it's like subtle. It could be like, I remember when I met with the Ayurvedic doctor like 10 years ago, one of the biggest things, he was like, I need you to go outside in the morning and get some sun.
Exactly. That's
like, he was like 10 minutes.
Yep.
Sit on your roof. I lived in New York at the time, right? There was a lot. It was the winter. And he was like, you need your body. It wasn't like, go take a vitamin D pill, right? It was like, you need 10 minutes of sun with your shirt off. And it was like, okay, that's easy enough.
Right.
Yeah, that really resonates. Thank you again for being here, for your time, for your wisdom. Thanks for doing what you're doing, not only for yourself, but for the people that you're helping healing and making a difference for.
Thanks, Alex.
Thanks for listening to another episode of The Frequency Shifters. We really hope that you got some value, you learned something, and that there's something from this episode that you can take away and use in your life. Who are you thinking of right now that needs to hear this episode? Please share it with them. Share this on social media, subscribe and like and leave a comment. And please, if you have a comment or an idea or something that you want us to talk about or investigate,
leave it online and we will go into those and bring you that information. Please like, share, and subscribe, and we will see you next time.